Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now from the UK is Mark Seddon, a professor of international relations at Columbia University and a former speechwriter for the then UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. He also worked as a UN correspondent and New York bureau chief for Al Jazeera English TV. And he has an article at The Guardian, "Have We Got Just 3 Months to Avert a US Attack on North Korea?" Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Seddon.
Thank you.
And an extraordinary communique came from the State Department today, pointing out that the UN United Nations envoy, Jeffrey Feltman, who's a former high-level US State Department official, who was going to North Korea on behalf of the UN, the State Department went out of its way to say that he is not carrying any message. They're aware of his travels. And I want to make this clear, the State Department spokesman said, that there's no kind of message from the US government that he's carrying. So that seems a bit strange, to be almost proud of the fact that we're not communicating with these people.
Well, I mean, I'm not privy to what communications there may or may not be. I mean, clearly there have been backdoor discussions in recent times. We're fairly sure that Secretary of State Tillerson has had backdoor discussions with the North Koreans, and that those discussions we hear didn't really reach any good conclusion. I mean, also, Jeffrey Feltman is going on behalf of the United Nations. I imagine he's taking some very some messages from the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres. But you know, the United Nations, as you will have seen, has said this is possibly one of the most high-level visits there have been by a UN official in many years. But of course, it comes at a time of really heightened tensions, and at a time when I suspect some people will be saying, "Well, where is everybody else?" The events seem to be taking a turn of their own, and the world seems to be looking on as two leaders are engaged in a kind of game of chicken.
Well, Donald Trump's actions on moving the U.S. Embassy, or announcing the movement of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, which has been met with universal condemnation and alarm, appears to be an act that he's doing simply because he can do it. There doesn't seem to be any sense to it, certainly no gain to it. And if that's extended to his attitude with North Korea, then we could really be in trouble. I think there's a certain amount of leverage, if you will, assumed in the madman theory that goes back to Richard Nixon warning the North Vietnamese that he was sort of crazy and would bomb the hell out of them. But I don't think that works with Kim Jong-un, does it? I mean, haven't the North Koreans been preparing for the last 50 years for an American attack? Isn't that what they live and breathe every day?
Well, I've been there several times, and I've also been to South Korea and China and what have you. My experiences in North Korea is very much as you say, that essentially, yes, there's a siege mentality. As you know, at the end of the Korean War, there was no peace agreement. There was an armistice agreement. And I think the leadership of the North is still hugely influenced by those events. I mean, don't forget that more ordnance was dropped on Korea during the Korean War than was dropped on Nazi Germany during the Second World War. And that generation still actually persists in the higher reaches of the Korean Workers' Party. You can see seared into this regime is the experience of that, but also of a fairly brutish wish to survive by the regime. This is, as you know, the only kind of hereditary Marxist-Leninist regime that we know of, really. And so, yes, it's predicated on that. And, yes, a belief that essentially the United States and other allies, such as Japan, are intent on harm. I mean, of course, that sort of ignores various attempts in the past, where there have been better relations, most notably under the Clinton administration. But yes, the North Koreans believe. and we've seen the whole ramping up of both the language, the number of military, the number of ICBM tests, the nuclear tests of the North, and of course the military exercises that have been taking place across the border, of which one is happening right now, for a four-day joint operation involving 12,000 military personnel from both the US and South Korea.
And again, I'm speaking with Mark Seddon, who is in the UK. He's a professor of international relations at Columbia University and a former speechwriter for the then UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. He also worked as a UN correspondent and New York bureau chief for Al Jazeera English TV. And he has an article at The Guardian, "Have We Got Just 3 Months to Avert a U.S. Attack on North Korea?" Well, wouldn't the point therefore be, Mark Seddon, that since the North Koreans have been preparing for this apocalyptic moment when the enemy that they've been told for over 50 years that bombed the hell out of them in, during the Korean War will strike at any moment, wouldn't that therefore preclude the possibility of them being caught by surprise, even with these stealth bombers like the F-22 and the B-2 that the U.S. has in this exercise that you just mentioned, but nearby? I mean, it just seems to me that the idea that there's a technical fix to this is reckless and dangerous.
Well, I mean, I think clearly there isn't a technical fix because you can't fix something that's been horrendously broken. And what we mean by that is mass casualties right across the Korean Peninsula, radioactive clouds, no doubt, possibility of other countries becoming involved. No, I mean, I think that the whole world is looking on aghast. I think the United Nations is too at what is going on and really wants to try and get both sides together. Now, of course, the North Koreans have historically wanted to have direct talks with the United States. And in fact, you know, occasionally President Trump intimates, you know, that there may be circumstances one day when he would sit down with Kim Jong-un. But the idea that the North Koreans, I mean, you know, I have to think that the biggest danger comes potentially from something happening in error at a time of extremely heightened tensions. I mean, we do have this view that you know, I reported on hearing that former US UN ambassador John Bolton had said that the CIA had reported to the president that there's a three-month window before the North Koreans actually have the capability to launch an ICBM with a nuclear payload that could possibly hit an American city. So we know that this ramping up is going on, but it's still, I think what clearly must stay the hand of people who want to, who might be advising for preemptive action, is that the sheer carnage that could result from a North Korean conventional military barrage across the south to Seoul is something that really strikes terror into the South Koreans. Now, of course, I mean, I'm not a military person, so one would assume that the American military are taking a look at the capacity of the North to do that. And if there is any military confrontation, how that could be best militated. But you know, this is the danger. I think at the moment comes from something happening by mistake, or a smaller incident getting out of hand, and that's got to be the biggest fear.
But we seem to be very cavalier about South Korean casualties. Lindsey Anderson, the senator, has made some rather cavalier remarks about going to war and without thinking about the collateral damage. And his latest statements are that U.S. dependence should be taken out of South Korea, military dependence and diplomatic dependence, and that the U.S. should not send any more dependence into the country. How is that being responded to in South Korea? I mean,
I'm not there, so I can't tell you. I can't give you an answer. But what we do know is that this new South Korean administration began by and was elected really for a variety of reasons, but one of them was really to begin a new process of rapprochement with the North, but has found itself boxed in as tensions have increased. And look, I mean, tensions are being exacerbated by both sides. There's no question of that. It's not. It's the North Korean regime and elements of the United States administration who I think do not have a nuanced or deep understanding of North Korea and really do need to learn pretty rapidly. But I think you get the impression that the South wanted to do that, but it feels boxed in. And, of course, it's very concerned. It doesn't want to be in a situation where it upsets its major military ally, the United States. And, of course, we'll be looking at a time of belligerence at perhaps what options it might have in the future. And, of course, there's a wider issue about the increased nuclearization of the whole region. All of this aids those in Japan who want to rip up the post-Second World War constitution and develop nuclear weapons. South Korea, nuclear weapons, becoming a nuclear weapons state. And also people do forget as well that the Chinese are not happy with Kim Jong-un at all. I mean, they feel that they have had very, very little leeway with this new regime. I don't believe that Kim Jong-un has even been to Beijing. Certainly you hear that, the very basic sort of links that were there before simply aren't there now. So China feels very angry about what's going on too. It leads to a perfect storm unless things are done pretty rapidly now to defuse it. And one hopes that the visit by UN Assistant Secretary General Jeffrey Feltman helps in that process.
So, Mark, are you still in touch with your former boss, Ban Ki-moon, former UN?
No, I'm not. I'm not. And you would, I mean, of course, he's now one of what they call the UN elders. And so he, I'm sure, will be speaking with others such as Kofi Annan and his successor. And I'm sure if they felt that he could do something, he would be involved. It may well be that he is, for all we know. I mean, don't forget that he was one of the architects of the sunshine policy with the North, which led to greater rapprochement before. But I'm sure anybody looking at this would probably say this has got to be the most serious situation there has been on the Korean Peninsula since the ending of the Korean War in 1953. And with, this race. The other thing that is kind of sort of slightly glossed over because people look at the fanaticism of the North is that this is that they have a million man conscript army, but most of the North Korean military is kind of Soviet era hardware is kind of not really up to scratch. It's got fuel shortages. There are claims that it may have perhaps a year's supply of oil. It's hidden away for this situation. But, beyond the nuclear program and beyond possibly a chemical weapons program, the North military is pretty dated. So, it's not this great invincible power, but at the same time, you have to take a look at it, and you look at Kim Jong-un and his predecessor leaders, and they all took a look themselves at what happened to Saddam Hussein and to Gaddafi in Libya. And they believe that they are safer having a nuclear missiles. But all of this, of course, what they're doing is in complete contravention of UN Security Council resolutions. And this is where the UN has a key role to play.
Well, I understand that Donald Trump consistently and persistently asks his Secretary of Defense, Dash Security Advisor, etc., for options, for military options, that he's frustrated. He's called Kim Jong-un Rocket Man and other names and talked about fire and fury. And he's apparently continually told that the options aren't good. But then, as you mentioned earlier, John Bolton was in London saying that the CIA is told the White House that there's only a 3-month window to do something before the North has the capability to strike the U.S. mainland with nuclear warheads on missiles. Why they would do that is another matter, but just assuming that the capability threshold is 3 months away and that has a kind of life of its own, that pressure, the clock is ticking. That seems to be the case. And Pompeo at the CIA is very much a political guy, very ambitious and quite a hawk. And the guy that would replace him at CIA is even worse, Senator Tom Cotton. So we don't have a lot to, I don't know where the restraint is coming from. Do you have any sense that there's anybody restraining Trump?
Well, I'm not there, so it's very difficult. All I can do is kind of like anybody else. I go on what I hear, what I read, but also on my kind of my understanding of what makes the North Korean regime tick and what I think makes people in America tick. And you get the impression, certainly, that Secretary of State Tillerson has been a restraining factor. Our understanding, insofar as we have it, of Donald Trump as president is that his mood can change from hour to hour, and that, you know, what may seem a great verity one moment can be completely turned on its head the next. So, you know, there's a degree. I mean, what particularly disturbing to anybody who's been looking at this is the sheer puerility of the dealings between Trump on Twitter and also some of the responses by Kim Jong-un. I mean, the people also need to know that the language that is used in North Korea is often very formal, old Korean. It's dated in comparison with the Korean that is spoken south of the border, but it's littered with the sort of guttural expletives. The way they use language about enemies is pretty offensive, but I think even they were unprepared for something that they had never come across before, which is a president who tweets whatever's coming into his mind at any given moment. And I think the social media has been this kind of weird echo chamber. It's exaggerated things. It's increased tensions. But it's been just staggeringly puerile. And the failure of those around Trump to rein him in, the failure of his party, is just kind of lamentable in a great democracy such as America. It is absolutely lamentable. I think it's probably a uniform global view. It's very difficult to find anybody out there who thinks any differently, really.
Well, just in closing, China's role, of course, we keep expecting China to get our irons out of the fire, and there's no love lost between Beijing and Pyongyang. And they, you know, they killed the brother who the Chinese were grooming, and the uncle was also killed. So it's pretty clear that Kim Jong-un fears the Chinese, if he fears anybody at all. The Chinese don't want the U.S. Army on the Yellow River. They don't want the place to collapse. And the U.S. is pressuring them now to cut off oil supplies, which the Chinese worry would precipitate a collapse in the north. So the only option would be for some kind of Chinese military invasion and to remove that regime and put in a more amenable one, because the Chinese are certainly not going to let the South and the Americans take over the North in the event of a collapse.
Yes. So
is there anything to that? I mean, I know I'm not a warmonger, I can guarantee you, but I want to run that scenario by you just in closing.
Well, I mean, at the moment, I mean, given what we know, given what we're hearing, of course, you know, there's in all of this, there's an awful lot of black propaganda that flies around from all sides. But I think where we are right now, if you were in Beijing, if you're one of the old wise men in the Chinese Politburo, you'd be probably thinking about what sort of collapse is worse. A collapse that brought about by turning off the sort of oil pipeline that keeps a sort of drip feed to the North Korean regime, or a collapse after a military conflict, which would be potentially far worse, because you know, this conflict would know no boundaries when it comes to, for instance, radioactive pollution. So, well, one has to think, yes. I mean, career watchers have talked for years of the possibility of some kind of Chinese-inspired coup that would possibly leave Kim Jong-un like Emperor Hirohito in Japan after the Second World War as a sort of titular head of state. But as you were just saying, at least two of the potential candidates for that role have either been executed, i.e. Kim Jong-un's uncle and regent, and subsequently his half-brother, who was assassinated in Malaysia. So, yeah, it does. Unless we move to a situation whereby there can be some really meaningful UN-Chinese brokered talks that open the way for serious talks between the Trump administration and North Korea, those are clearly options that may happen. I mean, altogether, right now, we are staring into the abyss, and I think the world is waking up to this.
Well, Mark Sedna, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Mark Sedden, who's a professor of international relations at Columbia University and a former speechwriter for the then UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. He also worked as a UN correspondent and New York bureau chief for Al Jazeera English TV. And he has an article at The Guardian, "Have We Got Just 3 Months to Avert a US Attack on North Korea?" And he joined us from the UK. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.